see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself.
Good morning. This is the Wonderful World radio show on your local San Marcos KZSM 104.1. The show is on the second Tuesday of each month and focuses on the San Marcos River and Edwards Aquifer issues. I'm your host this time. I'm John Craddett, president of the San Marcos Greenbelt Alliance. And hello also to all those listening online from out of town on kzsm.org and clicking on listen. Our guest today is Dr. Jason Julian, here this morning to discuss a newly published paper about the many natural areas in and around San Marcos which provide not only aquifer recharge from rainfall that helps the river keep flowing, but also very important wildlife corridors for habitat. Jason, can you tell us briefly about your background and then about the Texas State PhD student who worked on this paper but couldn't be with us today, and how he came to do this work with some funding from the San Marcos Greenbelt Alliance?
Thanks, John. Hi, my name is Jason Julian. I'm going into my 11th year as a professor at Texas State University, where I teach and conduct research on environmental geography, water resources, and land conservation. One of my responsibilities is to advise students, undergraduate, master's, and PhD. Raihan Jamil, the first author on this article, was one of my PhD students that recently graduated. And this article covers one of his dissertation chapters, which was funded by the San Marcos Greenbelt Alliance through a student research fellowship. The Greenbelt Alliance offers these fellowships to students at Texas State to do research that is in line with their mission. So once Raihan got the funding and he conducted this research using satellite imagery and some very sophisticated GIS tools to look at vegetation patterns and ultimately connectivity of these green spaces.
So what inspired this research?
So I've lived here in San Marcos now over 10 years, and I often sit in my home office looking out the window or sitting on the back porch. And like, you know, most San Martians, I love watching the wildlife, whether it's birds or deer, roadrunners, even wild turkeys on occasion, and even a couple times coyotes. And so sitting out there watching these wildlife, I wonder, you know, where are these wildlife coming from? You know, why don't I see more of it sometimes than others? So I gave Raihan a challenge. I was like, hey, you know, we have all this wildlife in San Marcos. Let's try to map these corridors. You know, where can the wildlife move? And so Raihan is much more tech savvy than I am and has a great set of skills that he used to map these. And so he went out and did this research, and it was just recently published.
Okay, well, can you give us layman's cliff notes on this academic paper?
Yeah, so the first thing Raihan had to do was figure out what all the land cover is in San Marcos, you know, whether it's trees, shrubs, grass, or developed areas. And so he took satellite imagery and made a real high-resolution map, so 60 centimeters, roughly, you know, 2 feet by 2 feet squares. And by doing that, he could identify where pretty much every tree is, every shrub, where every grass patch. And so he created this very high-quality map of San Marcos and then started running different models to figure out how all these areas are connected, using the natural areas and some of the other areas that have been previously defined or identified as prime habitat. So in the end, he mapped San Marcos and figured out why where we have all these wildlife corridors.
And the different methods were stacked over each other, covering the same study area, correct?
Yeah, so he did the entire city of San Marcos and the ETJ, which is the extraterritorial jurisdiction area, so the areas that San Marcos will expand in the future. and he looked at different models using expert advice. We contacted people with Texas Parks and Wildlife, Texas A&M, and then also another researcher funded by San Marcos Greenbelt Alliance, Rebecca Rylander, who's also a PhD student and did some of her research on golden cheek warbler. So we had some of that data, and we knew where golden cheek warbler nested and had habitats, and then we used other natural areas as areas for, say, like the wild turkey. So yeah, he used different models and figured out which one would be the best, but backed up with some empirical data.
Okay. Well, is one method better to use than another in a different setting, such as in a small urban green space versus a larger rural ETJ area?
Yeah, so this research has been done a lot in large areas like national parks and national forests and these big wide open spaces. The urban environment was a little bit more of a challenge because the green spaces like you have in backyards are smaller. And these individual trees in a person's backyard becomes important wildlife habitat. So he did have to use, again, some more sophisticated technology, high-resolution satellite imagery. And, it was just a little bit more time-intensive to figure out how these little small spaces contribute to these larger wildlife corridors.
Why did you choose the two bird species?
Yeah, so, I mean, we could have chosen a number of species. Golden cheek warbler, we actually had great data, thanks to Rebecca Rylander's studies. And so we knew where the golden cheek warbler were. We know that they're a very valuable and important species, both ecologically and culturally. We have protections set aside for the golden cheek warbler. So that was a very logical one. But we wanted to find another indicator species that has different habitat characteristics and different mobility. So obviously golden cheek warbler is moving through the air, whereas wild turkeys move along the ground. So certain land covers along the ground, like riparian areas or trees, would potentially be more important to the wild turkey, and just in terms of moving. So we use those two indicator species just because of their different movement patterns and their different habitat characteristics. But I think our findings are relevant to pretty much all wildlife within this area.
Were any of the animals trapped or tagged so you could follow an individual or for the study?
Not us. So again, Rebecca Rylander, the other PhD student over in biology, she went out and did very detailed surveys, both visual and sound. I don't know for sure if she trapped any of the birds or tagged them, but she did have the empirical data that we used for the golden cheek warbler. For the wild turkeys, it was more acknowledging that you will have higher populations in these larger natural areas, and then it was more of a modeling study. What Raihan did was mostly a modeling study. Again, he's a geospatial scientist, and he can use these sophisticated tools to model these wildlife movements.
So, quick question. Yes. So, there's an overlap here. We've got all of this natural area that is preserved for the golden cheek warbler, yeah, that is endangered. The wild turkey is not endangered, yeah, but yet, and that was, I'm kind of curious, from you were talking about the modeling, did they see an increase in the wild turkeys because of these natural areas, a crisscross between these two species that we were not trying to preserve the turkeys, but, did they see any? Anything along that line?
Yeah, again, for this study, we didn't actually count wild turkeys. I mean, anecdotally, we talk to people. I see them in my backyard or walk around the neighborhood or being in the natural areas. But previous research has found, when you protect habitat, it's other species that are also using that same habitat.
Yeah. Okay. So like the neighborhood green spaces that we have, I guess they have to be connected to each other. Are they an important corridor acting as an extension of the larger, working together as a larger green space for the wildlife?
Yeah, so we have these large natural areas, and San Marcos is very fortunate to have large natural areas like Purgatory Natural Area, Spring Lake Natural Area, Freeman Ranch. So you have these large areas that provide habitat, but the animals need to move. They need to find food. They breed. Sometimes there's disturbances like storms, floods, fires. And so the wildlife needs these corridors to be able to move to, you know, survive and be healthy and, I guess just, yeah, to survive as a species. So,
well, to thrive.
Thrive. Yeah. It's great to have these big, large natural areas, but you also have to have connectivity between them so that the wildlife can move between these.
So, like the green belt around town act as these corridors connecting some of the larger areas?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. So, with Rebecca Rylander's study, she found that, you know, the nesting sites were in these large protected areas. But when she was looking at the movement, they do move between these areas. For wild turkey, you know, they're mostly a ground species, so they do. They have to move along areas between the natural spaces, and they prefer not to move along highways and railroad tracks and things like that. So they would prefer to have those natural areas as well.
So having cover, you know, we can give a corridor, say, along a railroad track.
Yeah.
But you want that wildlife to have that cover because, you know, to go out in the open, they've got to run across this, you know, it's a danger for them. And
yeah.
So, so these corridors going between, you've gone and now looked at identifying them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so where do we go with that? Where do we go from there?
Yeah, so one of the main areas we found that were very important were these ranches, private ranches. And in fact, out of all the, Raihan mapped all the corridors, and what he found was that 58% of all habitat wildlife corridors exist on private lands, and the majority of those private lands were these large ranches. And so those
What do you define as a large ranch? I had this conversation with someone. I said, you know, all the large ranches are disappearing. We're talking 175 acres south of town.
Yeah.
You know, and they said, oh, that's not a large ranch.
Well, keep in mind, we're in an urban area.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're not in,
out in West Texas.
Yeah, okay, correct, which is totally different. So,
but.
I mean, a 10-acre ranch still provides a lot of habitat.
Okay.
So I would say, I mean, some of the ranches that we do find around town are these 10-acre ranches, and some are 20, and some are even, you know, 100-acre ranches.
Right.
When I say, okay, maybe I should say ranches just in general, because what we found is that some of these 10-acre ranches in the neighborhoods, like, say, Willow Creek, and, you know, some of those other neighborhoods along McCarty Road have a lot of these 10-acre ranches. And in the Country Estates neighborhood as well, you have some of these 10-acre properties that are very important for that wildlife. Now, some of the larger ranches that are 100 acres and above, what's important about them is that these are often the ranches that are targeted for development. Mm. And so those make great subdivisions where you can, you know, subdivide it into 1-acre ranchettes, which has been a common practice in San Marcos. Those ranches, you know, were most of the habitat, but even the residential neighborhoods made up 22%. And so a lot of this will be people's backyards, little green spaces behind people's houses, and or easements, deed restrictions, things like that.
Right. Well, even if you have the homes that are on 1 acre,
yeah.
You know, versus 5 or 6 homes on 1 acre.
Exactly. So
that makes a difference.
Yeah,
right? Is that what that's showing?
Yeah. Okay. So I live on a 1 acre piece of property within the Willow Creek neighborhood, and I see wildlife all the time. Like I said, deer, roadrunner. I've seen, you know, wild turkeys on occasion, mm-hmm. and even coyote twice. So even those 1 acre pieces of property are important.
the red fox.
We have lots of those. Yeah.
Tarantulas, you know, are going back in, but we had those last month. So. I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and take a quick station break here, and then we'll come on back. And John, I know you got some more questions here. And we are listening this morning to Wonderful World. Diane Wasnick is taking a break. She's up in Colorado. Shout out to you today, Diane. And just as a reminder that the views expressed on this show are those of the hosts, the guests, and not necessarily those of KZSM or SMTXCRA. And we're going to take a quick station break, talk about a few things that you can get involved in around town.
Centro Cultural Hispano de San Marcos and LULAC Council 654 have collaborated their efforts to hold the third annual Hispanic Heritage Exhibition Walk in San Marcos, Texas. The Exhibition Walk will serve as a kickoff event for Hispanic Heritage Month. This event will take place on Saturday, September the 14th, 10 a.m. at Centro Cultural Hispano de San Marcos, which is located at 211 Lee Street, and will culminate at the historic Hays County Courthouse. The walk will display the flags of Latin American countries represented during Hispanic Heritage Month. At the courthouse, there will be music, food, and vendors. Proceeds from this event will grant local students with scholarships to further their education. If your organization or business would like to participate, or for more information, please email us at hispanicheritageexhibitionwalk@gmail.com.
We are back on Wonderful World, the local radio show about the San Marcos River and the Edwards Aquifer on KZSM 104.1 on your radio and online kzsm.org. We have Dr. Jason Julian of the Geography and Environmental Studies Department at Texas State with us today, and we're discussing the newly published paper about the San Marcos area and wildlife corridors. Jason has much more to tell us about it and other work that he's been involved in.
Thank you.
So, Jason, we've got these great maps now that y'all have put together. That's a great tool. What can we do with them from here?
And first, before I start that, one thing I didn't mention, we're the other two co-authors on this paper. So Raihan is the first author and the PhD student, and I'm his advisor. But we also had on the paper Dr. Kimberly Meitzen, who's also an environmental geographer and biogeographer at Texas State, and Dr. Jennifer Jensen, who's a landscape ecologist at Texas State. So I just want to make sure that I acknowledge them and their help with this work. So we put together these great maps. One of the findings were these habitat corridors. So Raihan, after he mapped them, he figured out which ones had the largest areas and which one could potentially support the most wildlife. And so they were ranked based on that. And the first one, the primary one, was this area between Freeman Ranch and Purgatory Natural Area. And so that's those areas, there's, you know, a couple big private ranches there, right at that intersection between Wonder World and Ranch Road 12. Unfortunately, that area has been set aside for development, or at least most of it. So you're going to have a developer to come in there and build houses, build roads, and other structures. So what we're hoping is that by having these maps, they can help inform the developer, and we can work with the developer to at least maintain some of these corridors. So have easements and parks and treat areas where we can still at least have some of that corridor. The second big corridor was there behind the Country Estates neighborhood coming from Freeman Ranch. And there's also been development targeted there as well. So, you know, again, hopefully, you know, these maps can be shown to developers and they can work with San Marcos Greenbelt Alliance, the city, the county, San Marcos River Foundation to, again, help at least do it in a way that at least mitigates some of the damage that development could cause.
So if a developer was wanting to put in a subdivision with larger lot sizes versus a high density, smaller lots, that would be beneficial to the wildlife and maintaining the corridor?
Yeah, that would be great. And I would even go a step further and maybe put some deed restrictions on those new properties that are being developed. For example, my house in Willow Creek has a deed restriction on the back third of it. I'm not allowed to fence it or make any development. And the point of that is to maintain that habitat corridor. So these new 1 acre properties that are coming in or even maybe half acre, you could put deed restrictions on those to prevent fences and other development to maintain those habitat corridors.
Okay. So leaving a actual green space that the animals can run through instead of having a privacy fence corner to corner.
Correct. Yeah.
Now here's a question kind of for both of y'all, because you know the current we have invasive feral hogs that we're dealing with, that okay, they're going to follow the corridor as well, that and you know, we also have our intermittent mountain lions that have been coming down, you know, during the drought especially, you know, they coming in. And so yes, these corridors allow for the warblers, for the turkeys, you know, but then also that we're going to have to maintain and keep an eye on those, on the hogs as well, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's just a thought for me that it's, hey, you get all, you get everything, yeah, you know, that's going to fall on this corridor.
Yeah. I mean, the hogs are, they're going to reproduce regardless. I think they're going to be a problem either way you go. So I wouldn't see the potential spreading of the hogs as a negative. I think that's going to happen anyway. If anything, you know, if they concentrate in certain areas, they're going to do a lot more damage in those certain areas. Mm-hmm. And John, you might have more.
Well, in the last 10 years, I have seen them. We live kind of on the edge of town in the country too. I have seen the hog populations increase and decrease over the years. So, and I don't know what is influencing them coming through our area.
Yeah, it was a question. That hopefully some people may have. I know, well, we're doing out in Purgatory, I know we have traps there. We have, you know, we're trying to mitigate a lot of the damage, you know, that they're doing. So that's just the question.
Yeah.
That, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. this is, it's a good tool. We've got that we're learning, and that, wow, we're taking advantage of Texas State being here to help us with our mapping out of our green space. And so, John, how do you see this as helping with the mapping? You know, we've got the, you know, we've talked about this many times on the show, the circle check, you know, that we've got the loop that we're trying to integrate a lot of things. How does this, you know, we talked about working with the developers to make sure we have these corridors. How does this work in with what we're doing with the Greenbelt and with the Greenbelt Alliance and with the trails?
Yeah, the properties that are especially up on the recharge zone kind of serve a dual purpose. They are protecting the recharge water going into the aquifer, which then supplies water to the springs and our river, which is a great economic source for the city. We've got to keep the river flowing to keep people coming and keep the tourists coming to town. And by protecting the recharge zone up in the hill country, you know, it's all part of that same circle. And so we have that beautiful land up there. San Marcos Greenbelt Alliance engineers, designs, constructs, and maintains the trails on this property. We don't own any of the property. It's owned by the city and the county. But we are working with them on putting in these trails so that people can actually get out, enjoy these pieces of property that can't be otherwise developed. We put in natural surface trails that are, you know, 30 inches wide or so over a 200 acre piece of property. The trail doesn't erode out. The whole area is very protected. People can enjoy it. And the wildlife in that property and the natural area can also migrate through. these pieces of property are like puzzle pieces that are being put together one or two pieces at a time. There are several pieces that would be great to add to the puzzle that can connect. Right now, we've almost got everything, a loop around San Marcos that people can hike and bike around San Marcos now or soon. That will come, you know, next would be people coming from downtown out to these, to the loop around San Marcos and enjoy the natural areas. And that would be another corridor for the wildlife to be able to move in and out of town and around the town through.
And I'd like to add, John says dual purpose, but these natural spaces, these green belts, these trails provide many other services as well. It's not as important as water is. Air quality is important, and we're seeing declines in air quality with all the traffic. And so these natural areas also help with air quality. They help with flood mitigation. They help with pollination services. That, you know, there's a whole suite of ecosystem services that we're getting from these natural areas.
So I'm going to go back to you, Jason, with this study that you've done and utilizing all of the different resources from different places here at the university. Okay, and I know especially the geography, the mapping, this is something that I've seen over the last 10, 15 years that the Texas State has really excelled at. What are some of the findings from this research and from this paper going forward that you see that we need to continue this research, and where does that, you know, going off of this?
So I think the first step would be to broaden it out. We use San Marcos as a study area, but as we know, the broader area, the entire Hays County, Central Texas, all this is important, that the wildlife's moving throughout here, the water recharge, the water quality. I think this needs to be expanded out even to a statewide level. And we are, I mean, there's been other studies statewide, you know, mapping these ecosystem services, all these benefits that we're getting from nature. So I think if we could take this high resolution type of mapping out into the broader area like Hays County, the Hill Country and Central Texas, that can help us make better decisions with development at a statewide scale.
So I guess the other thing that I'm noticing here from sitting on this side of the microphone table here is the advantage that the local organization, the San Marcos Greenbelt Alliance, has with Texas State being here and the research and what you're doing here is that helps to plan. It helps going forward with the nonprofit. You know, how do we work together, you know, and with the River Foundation and all of these different things that we have here locally that, you know, we're in good shape compared to most communities.
Yeah.
You know, Kyle doesn't have a clue what's about to hit them or what is hitting them already.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, New Braunfels, you know, to a point, but I mean, all of us up and down the corridor here, you know, how do we continue to keep, you know, we hear about a lot of success stories that are happening in Texas right now, especially along the border, but those are the areas that we still have open areas, you know, and you know, how are we going to continue those future success stories for the for wildlife and for the environment? You know, it comes down to water quality. You know, that's one of the things we talked about here.
Yeah, I think San Marcos is fortunate that we have all these institutions. We have Texas State University, which is a valuable resource of knowledge and just, you know, a lot of students that are out there, you know, willing, very conservation minded and want to do their part. We have the San Marcos Greenbelt Alliance, which for decades has been doing a great service, and also the San Marcos River Foundation. And I think how the three of those come together, you know, is a huge plus for San Marcos. San Marcos is lucky to have all three of those organizations working together.
All right. Jason, thank you. So, John, do you want to wrap us up here?
Okay. Well, thank you all for listening today to Wonderful World and our River and Aquifer News. Be sure to listen again on the second Tuesday in September at 11:30 when we will be back covering river and aquifer issues. Learn more about our local radio station, KZSM 104.1 in San Marcos, by going to kzsm.org. And do consider volunteering. Keep the radio station and our volunteer organizations operating, and bring your local programs. Thank you to our producer, Rob Rourke.
All right. And thank you all for coming in and listening in.
Of green and red roses too, I see them blue.